to Watching ID. I'm Jill.
And I'm Dick.
And today we're talking about Gone in Georgia, a disappeared special on Investigation Discovery. So this is the story of missing person Kelly Nash, who disappeared on January 5th, 2015. He was 25.
Yeah, Kelly lived in Buford, Georgia, working with his dad, Alan, in a custom home building business. They were doing fairly well. The market was improving, and they were in demand, making some of the more upscale homes. Now, Buford's a lakeside suburb about 25 miles from Atlanta on Lake Lanier. Beautiful place.
Yeah, they show some really nice footage. It makes you want to live there.
Almost, except for the heat and humidity.
But the father's right on the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty house.
It is. And the family's lived there since Kelly was around 5 years old.
Yep. So he was working, they said, around 30 hours a week with his dad and taking classes full-time at the community college to get his degree in accounting.
Yeah, he had dropped out of Auburn University. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he was trying to get a degree in accounting and take a more active role in his father's business.
Right, which looked like a pretty good business from the look of his father's house.
It looked like he was doing okay, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Yep.
So when he disappeared, Kelly was living in a rental home with his girlfriend Jessica.
It was 7:30 a.m. on January 5th. Alan Nash, Kelly's father, got a call from Kelly's girlfriend Jessica. She asked if he had heard from or seen Kelly. She asked maybe he had picked up Kelly early for work, which would have been unusual, but she's grasping at straws at this point, because it just didn't make any sense to her that Kelly was gone. Alan hadn't heard from Kelly. He drove over to the house, and they searched the house and the cars, trying to figure out what the hell's going on here.
Yeah, what is it? Now, we know that the day before, Kelly wasn't feeling well. And he stayed home playing some video games and just kind of chilling out and relaxing because he was under the weather. He had kind of like a sinus infection or something.
Yeah, he was one of these people that gets one every year. So there must have been like probably an allergic component.
Yeah.
When that happens.
I mean, if you have seasonal allergy stuff, you can get sinus infections fairly easily.
Yeah, so he was homesick.
He was homesick. He left the house once around 9 o'clock in the night to grab some things for Jessica from the local convenience store. And then, according to Jessica, they watched some Netflix and they went to bed around 11:30. Well, they both went to bed. Kelly fell asleep, but Jessica stayed awake because Kelly was coughing his lungs out.
Yeah, so he couldn't have been sleeping very much.
No.
Trying to sleep, I guess.
No.
Now, Jessica asked him to go sleep on the couch, she says, because she had to get up for work the next morning. And he was keeping her awake. So then around 3:30 a.m., she heard Kelly playing his Xbox. She went out and saw him playing his game, and he told her he was just going to finish that game and go to sleep. So the way she describes this, maybe it's just my interpretation, but I kind of picture her going out and saying, you know, you're making a hell of a lot of noise out here. I'm trying to sleep.
Yeah.
And he said, after this game, I'm going to go to sleep.
Well, I would take that impression also. I mean, why else would you go out?
Yeah.
You know he's there. You can hear him.
Right. So I kind of feel like maybe they were having a bit of a disagreement, not a great time together.
Well, yeah. Plus, if she goes into the bedroom and closes the door, to me that's like, don't bother coming in here, you know?
And if he's sick, I mean, telling him to go on the couch, I guess, but it doesn't seem very nice. So I kind of am suspicious right away of the relationship between Jessica and Kelly. Like, maybe she's understating things to make it look better.
I get that impression, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jessica gets up a little after 7 in the morning to walk the dogs, and Kelly's not there. Comforter's on the couch where he'd been lying. Pillow is there. Remote control for the game was there. And his headset was there. Everything's on the couch, like he was, you know, still playing Xbox, but no Kelly.
Right. So she thought, well, he must have gone somewhere, maybe the gym. So she looks out the window, and she sees that his truck and car are still in the driveway. So that's really strange. Next step she does is she tries to call his cell phone. But the phone vibrates on the couch beneath the comforter, so he hasn't even taken his phone. So according to his family, it's highly unusual for Kelly to leave the house without his phone. And I would venture to say, 2015, nobody leaves without their phone. People
no.
just don't do that.
You have your phone on you at all times.
Right. You never know when an important text message is going to come through, or a Words with Friends game you want to play or something. That's right. So that's pretty worrisome, though, when the phone's there and the cars are there.
Yeah. I mean, everything's there as it should be.
Right.
Except for that boy.
And even if he was mad at her or something, he would have taken a car and his phone. And so what the heck? So now she really knows something's wrong, and she decides to call Alan.
So she's worried, and she calls Dad, his dad. So Alan comes over, helps search the house, doesn't find anything of interest, tells Jessica to call 911. Now, and the time she called and the police came over, she told them that Kelly had no history of mental health issues or drug abuse. He left behind his vehicle, his wallet, and his phone. And, of course, it's only a few hours, so the police said they couldn't do anything until it had been 48 hours.
I guess, but this is a suspicious disappearance. It's not like someone took off to me.
Well, I can see that because we know the story, but sure. I think at the time you get the story that, well, he was out on the couch playing Xbox and maybe we had a little argument, that type of thing.
Well, so, I don't think anyone ever said that.
No, but maybe things were a little tense between the two of them.
Maybe.
And he's gone, so I can see the police saying.
Yeah, I mean, he could have been picked up by a friend or something,
sure.
I guess. They don't know him.
Nope.
Well, it was close to freezing outside that night, too. And Alan and the family decided they're not going to wait for the police. They're going to go ahead and start a search on their own.
Well, I would do that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd be freaked out.
Yeah. The police say, well, it's, you know, missing persons, we'll wait 48 hours. Who wants to do that? Your family, you're going to look for them.
Well, no, because whatever's going to happen has already happened by then.
That's right.
So Alan and Kelly's mom, Beverly, had been divorced for 3 years. She lived about 6 hours away in the Florida Panhandle. Alan called her to let her know what was going on. Now, back when his parents split, Kelly had been 22 years old, and he was a junior at Auburn University in Alabama. So at this point in the show, they give us a little background on the family.
I'm noticing 22 years old and a junior. He must have taken some time off after high school or something, or is taking fewer courses.
Maybe.
Because at 22, you should be a year graduated.
Well, it depends how old you are when you graduate high school. What if you're 19 when you graduate high school?
Well, still.
Okay, he might have been a little behind, but.
Yeah, it's not important.
No, but he's a junior, and from what they said in the show, he'd really taken the divorce hard, and that's when he left that school to help his mom get settled into her new home. I'm not sure if you really need to do that. I mean, you wouldn't need more than a week or so to get her settled in, but I kind of concentrated more on the fact that he had a hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would, too. I don't know that you need to drop out of school to help your mother get settled. Sounds kind of weird to me.
Yeah, I think there was more emotional stuff going on. I don't know if it was with her or with him or with both of them. From what Beverly says in the show, they were quite close.
Obviously.
And he kind of felt protective of her. So we don't know what made the divorce happen or anything, but it sounds like there was kind of a falling out maybe between Kelly and his dad for a while.
Maybe, yeah. Although he was presently or at the time of this occurrence, he was working for him.
Yeah, I think they were getting along fine at that
point. Plans to join his company when he finished his education.
Well, yeah, he's already joined the company. He's working with them as he goes to school.
Yeah, but become more of a partner.
Maybe be set up to take it over one day.
Now, a little more on the backstory of Kelly. He was a jock. He played basketball in high school, and he had a lot of friends. But he wasn't just an athlete. He was a pretty bright kid. Well, he must have been bright enough. He got into Auburn.
Is that a tough school?
It's not an easy school to get into. So a friend of his named Garrett, who'd known Kelly since the 10th grade, said that Kelly was very smart, an avid reader, liked to discuss philosophy. Well, Garrett says he wasn't too worried at first when he heard Kelly was missing, because Kelly was a pretty independent guy, and he'd sometimes go off for a bit to be alone.
Yeah, now when his sister Holly heard from her dad that Kelly was missing, she was pretty worried, because she knew this wasn't like Kelly. She's 5 years older than him, and they were quite close as well. And she agreed with Garrett that Kelly was a very smart and thoughtful person. But then there were some things at the house that made Kelly's disappearance really concerning. Of course, the TV screen actually showed that his game character had gone idle. before he finished his game.
Yeah, and he also owned a gun. And while they're looking for Kelly and looking around the house, they can't find the gun. So they assume that Kelly has it. Along with the gun missing, there was a clip of the gun missing.
Yeah, so this would really worry me.
So that sounds very worrisome, doesn't
it? Yeah, that's very concerning because he wasn't a guy who normally carried a gun with him. It was something he just kept, I guess, for protection. So they wondered, did he hear a noise and go outside with the gun to see who was there? But he was a strong, athletic guy who could protect himself, and if he had a gun, too, how could someone have taken him?
Right.
And abducting 25-year-old men is a pretty rare thing, and he's a big guy.
And he's big. He's 6'2", 230 from those reward posters we saw in the show.
Yeah, basketball star in high school.
He's a big guy.
Mm-hmm. Also, Jessica had noticed that the door to the attached garage was left ajar. So this was a door between the two car doors, I think, where Jessica and Kelly usually entered and exited the house. So, like most of us, they didn't use their front door.
Right.
That's the door they used, and it was ajar. So, that's a sign that he walked out of there. But there's no signs of a struggle or any kind of fight. There's no blood.
Nope. He just got up and left, as far as they could tell.
As far as they could tell. Alan and Jessica walked out into the woods behind the house. So, when they show behind the house, it looks like there's a lot of woods. They had two dogs with them, and they walked about a mile out and found nothing. Then, by early afternoon, the police finally agreed to bypass their 48-hour rule at the family's urging, and they began an official search for Kelly.
Well, there's a lot around this disappearance that would make you worried.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I can see where they convinced the police to start the search a little quicker. So a policeman came to the house. He looked through Jessica and Kelly's phones. He found the most recent call from Kelly's cell phone was made to Jessica just minutes before she said she last saw him. His call was picked up by her voicemail.
So what about that? That's weird,
yeah.
Huh? I mean, you could think maybe she was asleep and he'd woken her up with that, but I just really get the feeling here like something was going on between these two that she's not telling us.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's in the living room playing Xbox. She's in the bedroom. If he has something to say to her, go in the bedroom.
Right. But he called her.
He calls her.
Unless something was happening to him and he was trying to call her for help. That's another thing. I don't know. It's very strange. It was only a 28-second message. And what they said, it was just a few muffled words and a lot of silence. So, I mean, it could have been an accidental call. It could have been him wanting to talk to her. But we know the phone didn't leave the house.
Right.
So we just don't know. But I'm not putting suspicion on the girlfriend necessarily, but I feel like she didn't share everything, at least not in the show. Maybe police know more than we do, probably. Probably know a lot more than we do, actually.
Well, yeah. I'd be suspicious.
Yeah, it's just odd.
There's some of those behaviors just don't sound right, and there's this phone call made when they're in adjoining rooms.
Right.
Now, holy cow.
But what could she have done with him? She's tiny. He's big.
Well, like you said, you're not thinking she's that involved, just that something was going on between them, something more than she was willing to share with the police.
Right, and maybe she feels guilty because they were arguing when he left or whatever.
Yeah.
Plus he was sick.
He was. Well, yeah. I mean, it's a sinus infection.
You can be pretty sick with that. You can be miserable, especially if he was hacking.
Okay. You're not that sick.
Well, you're a tough guy.
No, definitely. I mean, there's nothing against the law with Kelly just walking away, right?
Right.
But the fact that he left behind his wallet, his phone, his car,
and
makes it concerning. And there's a missing gun. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that makes you very concerned about this.
Yeah, why would he take a gun and not his phone? And where would he walk? It was cold out, like freezing out.
Right.
So that day, dozens of family members and friends showed up at Kelly's house to help search for him. They handed out a bunch of flyers around the neighborhood, and then a detective finally showed up that afternoon, and he released his information to the media. And the father spoke on the local news, trying to get the word out, but they didn't find anything that day.
Nope. So January 6th, which is the following day, volunteers started searching from sunrise on. And police gathered as much security footage as possible from the businesses around Kelly's home. And they get a hit right away. There's a gas station about a half mile from Kelly's house. And there was footage on there that showed someone walking on the side of the road around 4:30 in the morning. Now, the image isn't clear enough to identify who the person is, just that there's a person walking. But the interesting thing is this gas station is between Kelly's house and his father's house. So I guess you would think, well, maybe that could be him.
Well, why would he walk to his father's house in the middle of the night when he has two cars? He has a car and a truck.
I know. But what else you got?
I don't know. His sister says it didn't really look like the way he walks, but it's hard to say because it's freezing out. He would have been walking quickly, and we don't know what kind of mental state he would have been in, because something had to be wrong. Not a normal thing to do, right?
No, it's not.
Right. So if he decided to walk to his father's house, it's just really strange, and Jessica doesn't think he would do that.
Yeah, plus he was in pajamas, right?
Yeah, pajamas.
So, it was a cool to cold night, probably cold for Georgia, around freezing.
Mm-hmm.
He's in fleece jammies.
I know, and he doesn't feel well.
Does have shoes on, because I remember that.
Yeah, I was going to say, they didn't say, but I'm pretty sure he did have his shoes.
Yeah.
He did leave the house.
Yeah.
He wasn't dragged out of the house because he had his shoes and he took the gun.
Yeah.
We're assuming it's him that took the gun.
Right. But we don't know who that walker is on the CCTV.
No, we don't.
Kelly's behavior and disappearance is pretty devastating to his sister, Holly. She had lunch with Kelly just a week before his disappearance, and he seemed happy about his job or his job situation and his upcoming graduation. So things are looking good for him at that point.
Yeah, I think he was going to graduate in the spring, late spring.
Yep.
Another video did surface from the convenience store at 9 p.m. the night before he disappeared. In the video, Kelly looks normal and happy. He pulls up out front and enters the store in his pajamas. He's on his phone with Jessica. Then he picks up some items to buy and walks up to the clerk, talks with the clerk, and he appears to be lighthearted and whistling, you know, the normal, good-natured Kelly.
Right. And this goes along with Jessica's story that he was sick, but he ran out to the convenience store that night before to pick some things up for her.
Right. Yeah.
So we got kind of confirmation of that, right?
Yes, yeah, so at least we know that at 9 o'clock he was fine, apparently.
Or appeared fine.
Yeah. So this is reassuring to his mom to see that he didn't seem afraid or like anything was wrong at that point. But at the same time, the video's painful for her to watch because she knows that's the last she'll see of him. He disappeared soon after that.
Soon after, he's gone missing.
Yep, so now we've got him missing for 2 days, and the family creates a Facebook page to spread the word. Well-known dog handler and search and rescue expert Tracy Sargent of Canine Search and Rescue comes to Buford to help the Nashes find Kelly. The Nashes had actually called her for help. Her dogs are trained to find people, both living and dead. She feels confident if Kelly's in the area that her dogs would be able to locate him.
Yeah, his gun was normally kept in a gun case, but Jessica and Kelly had just moved recently. So the gun could have been in one of the moving boxes.
Yeah, but did she know or not? I wasn't clear on that from the show.
No, I think she's just surmising.
Yeah, but wouldn't you know where a gun is?
Well, he would.
Well,
I don't know.
I'd want to know where that gun was at all times.
Yeah, but you have that thing about guns.
Okay, well.
It's his gun. He knows how to keep track of it.
Okay. Well, they don't have kids or anything, so I guess. And they'd only moved in a few months before, so I wonder how long they were going out before they moved in together. How long-term of a relationship was this?
Good point.
I'm not sure.
So the family has no idea why Kelly would have disappeared. Nobody does.
No.
He had no known enemies, and they can't think of any reason why he would ever leave on his own. And police don't believe that Kelly met with foul play at his house, because there's no evidence of a struggle, or blood, or anything that looked like something had happened in the house. Plus the other thing, if something had occurred inside or around the house, his dogs would have alerted to it.
Well, if you're going to take a 6-foot guy out of his house, there's going to be something askew, some kind of sign.
You'd probably have to knock him out.
I would think you'd have to do something to him.
Quickly. Yeah. I mean, if they go in, somebody goes in or some bodies go in to abduct him, he's going to put up a struggle.
Right.
And it would be noisy.
Yeah, and we'll get to theories of what happened in a little bit, but I don't think anyone took him out of his house, and the police didn't either, of course.
No.
So the command center for Kelly's search was moved from the living room in the house to a warehouse in Beaufort, and this was on January 8th. So there was frigid rain and the threat of lightning, and volunteers were asked to leave that day. But Tracy and her dogs continued to search. Tracy wanted to check out Lake Lanier. If the figure walking past the gas station at 4:30 a.m. was Kelly, he may have been walking to his dad's house. His father's house was right next to the water. So it's a good possibility that Kelly could have fallen in and drowned.
Sure. But then we're going back to, well, if he's leaving his house to go to his dad's house, why doesn't he just hop in a car or his truck and go over?
Well, that's why I really think there's something was going on in his head. Something wasn't right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Some kind of reaction to medication or, you know, he's still at that age where mental illness can kick in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the theory of that mysterious walking person being Kelly on his way to his father's house, this theory goes along with what several witnesses had told the police, that they had seen Kelly or someone looking like Kelly walking along roadways close to the lake. So to rule out the possibility of Kelly being in the lake, Tracy takes the dogs to check each dock, one at a time.
Now, how do you feel about the witnesses? I think that usually eyewitnesses aren't the greatest, but this is the kind of thing you're going to remember at that time of the night, seeing someone walking. I put faith in that.
I might put a little bit more. I mean, you know, we've talked about eyewitnesses and how probably unreliable they are.
Well, I mean, if they were trying to distinguish between Kelly and another guy, I wouldn't trust it because it's dark and stuff.
Right, but if they saw a guy.
They said they saw a guy, that's pretty likely to be true.
Right, so I'd buy that.
Yeah.
So the dogs are checking each dock, and all three of their dogs hit on the sixth dock that they checked.
So this is an ominous thing.
It sure is.
Yeah.
So, boom, right there.
Yeah, and there's no visible sign of Kelly. So Tracy goes back and reports her findings to the police. And I don't believe they tell the family at that point, you know, because it's not for sure. And from what I've heard from these dog trainers in other shows and in articles is that they don't want to give the families false hope. That's a big deal. Although this wouldn't give you false hope.
No, this would make it seem
this would give you
he was in the water.
Devastation. Yeah. Now, on the fifth day of Kelly's disappearance, the cold weather lifts. And the command post is open to accept a large number of volunteers. They passed out 15,000 to 20,000 flyers and had about 1,000 volunteers helping. Helicopters searched above the woods, and rangers from the Department of Natural Resources brought out radar equipment to check the lake. They focused on the shoreline where the dogs alerted, but they find no sign of Kelly. So the entire terrain for 5 miles out of Kelly's house was combed over very thoroughly. Like, they couldn't have missed him if he was there, pretty much.
Yeah, but they didn't find anything.
They didn't find him. So this is becoming a huge mystery.
And so a week after his disappearance, on the 11th of January, the search was officially called off. Now, his sister Holly held on to the hope that Kelly was staying away out of fear of confrontation. So I guess her theory is that he went away to think or do something, and all this ruckus is going on, and he didn't want to come forward at that time and be the center of attention about why you disappeared.
Yeah, that's just grasping at straws.
Isn't it?
That doesn't happen.
No.
If he knew everyone was looking for him and he was in his right mind, he would have come back or called.
I would think.
Yeah.
So a couple of days later, the Nash family and their close friends are determined to keep his name still out there. And a billboard company has agreed to put out his picture and information about the disappearance in several locations.
Yeah, this is really tough because when the police decide to end the search, that must be heartbreaking. You must feel kind of abandoned and hopeless.
Well, yeah. I mean, you always think they should be doing more because they haven't found the guy yet.
Exactly.
So he hasn't been found.
Right. And this is just a case to them, but to his mom, that's her son.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you don't want the public to forget, because the public has a very short memory. It's kind of sad.
No, that's true.
Another case is going to come up,
and they're going to move on to the next thing to catch their attention.
It was really a great thing that Kelly's friend was able to get these billboards out there.
Well, it was. I mean, there were a few of them, not just one.
Yeah, and, you know, a billboard, that gets thousands of people seeing it when they're driving down the highways.
Every day you're driving down, there it is.
But for his mom, seeing his face on the billboards, pretty tough for a mom to see that.
Yeah, that had to be tough. So on Friday, January 16th, the Nashes continue to update Kelly's Facebook page, or the Kelly is Missing Facebook page. And they give instructions to volunteers on ways to spread the word about Kelly. They also continue looking for more security videos that could help figure out where he was the night he disappeared. And they have to go out on foot and investigate themselves to find this footage, because the police have suspended the search.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would think that anybody in the area would have been alerted right away to get that footage to them. It's crazy to me that the family had to go out and knock on doors.
It is. People weren't volunteering.
Yeah.
Company businesses and stuff.
Well, and the police weren't getting warrants to take it.
Yep.
So it really doesn't seem like there was a ton of effort at that point by police or by the local businesses, because it took such a long time.
Yeah, but they did get a hit.
They did. Later that day, a church that was one block away from the gas station gave them footage from their camera that pointed toward the road where the walking figure had been spotted at 4:30 a.m. on January 5th.
So it looks like they're past the gas station, and they have footage of some blurry figure walking. So presumably it's the same person.
Yeah, they still can't identify it as him.
No. I mean, we saw this on the show, and the footage from the gas station, you could clearly see a person walking. I really had to concentrate hard on the church's video to see a moving figure.
Yeah, it really doesn't give you much.
No.
No.
I mean, basically, I saw a couple legs moving.
Yeah. Now, without an official ground search from the police anymore, the volunteers start to fall off, too.
Sure.
So it goes from 1,000 to maybe 12 people.
Yep.
Helping out. Alan Nash says it's the kindness and caring of the volunteers that got him through these days, however, because it was just so hard to wonder what had happened to his son and to worry. And the only thing that made him feel any better was thinking that people cared. But then people fall away and they don't seem to care as much, and that has to be tough to take.
Well, yeah.
But Kelly seems like he was a really kind young man.
He does. I mean, he did some coaching to a teenage girl on the high school basketball team, and I guess she turned out to be a pretty good player. So she gave a game ball to Kelly's mother, gave her a big hug, and this was a pretty moving gesture for the family.
Oh, it brought tears to my eyes. It was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole family was there in the stands.
Yeah, mom, dad, and sister.
With the help of donors, they were able to raise a $50,000 reward for information that would lead to finding Kelly. Within 24 hours of the reward being announced, the family and police received several new leads about possible sightings, and some of them seemed to have potential. But unfortunately, they all ended up being cases of mistaken identity. So I think you put the reward out there, you're going to probably get some kooks that just want the money.
Well, sure. So. Not just kooks, but people that are thinking that they can score some money.
Yeah, so that's sad. So they get this burst of information, which turns out to be crap. And probably some of the people thought they really had seen him.
Sure.
Yeah. 13 days after Kelly's disappearance, the family feels like they're right back where they started. They have no idea what happened to him. I mean, what are the clues, really?
There are none. So there's a major development coming up on February 8th. Which was about 5 weeks since he went missing, the police received a call from a resident near Lake Lanier. And this caller said that a fisherman had seen a body floating near their dock. So the Hall County Sheriff's Department goes to retrieve the body, which is just a few miles from Kelly's home. And the following day, the body is identified as Kelly Nash. Now, this is in the same area where Tracy's dogs had hit on his scent. So they figured he was at that dock, but when they searched the waters around the dock, they didn't find anything.
Yeah, the police said he probably sank to the bottom of the lake and then came afloat when they found him and drifted to that area. The thing is, I guess, from what I understand about the sonar, is it just goes sideways of where you are, so it doesn't go down to the bottom. So if something's floating on top or lying on the bottom, the sonar is not going to catch it.
Yeah, and it's not like crystal clear water that you can see all the way to the bottom anyway.
No, it's a lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they think he sank to the bottom, came up later. The Nash family, devastated, of course. This puts an end to the search, an end to any hope that they had. So they decided to retreat from the public eye and to get off social media and just be together and grieve, which makes total sense to me. So it's hard for them to imagine they're going to live the rest of their lives without Kelly. Now this is where the show pretty much leaves us.
That's right. I mean, they hadn't even determined the cause of death by the end of the show.
No.
So
what else do we know from internet research?
I don't know. What do we know?
Well, it was released that Kelly Nash had suffered a gunshot. So police said they didn't believe there was any foul play, which makes us think it was a suicide. But then I've read since then that they haven't ruled out foul play. So the manner and cause of death really hasn't been released to the public.
Well, the cause of death, I would presume, is the gunshot wound.
Yeah, we just don't know if it was self-inflicted or by somebody else. Now, Kelly had no history of being involved with shady people or drugs or anything. So we have limited possibilities of what happened to him. Nobody thought he was suicidal.
Well, I think that's the most likely occurrence.
Sure, it is.
That he killed himself.
Well, you wonder, did he have some kind of mental breakdown? And I thought, what about the sinus infection? That's close to the brain. Can't things happen to your brain from a sinus infection?
Not that quickly.
Well, we don't know how long he was sick.
Well, we know that he was well enough to play video games and to converse normally with his girlfriend.
Okay.
So I'm going to eliminate sinus infection spreading to his brain or giving him some meningitis or some brain infection. That's just not going to happen that way.
Okay. So now we're back to the girlfriend's story.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that don't sound quite right to me, but nothing that really makes it point a finger at her.
Well, no, I don't think she killed him, but I think that there was my thought on it, is that I think they had an argument. They weren't getting along. He was mad or upset, and he went off and killed himself, probably by the water, so no one would have to see him or...
Yeah, now I would go maybe the little bit differently from that. I think if he was having an acute argument or something like that with his girlfriend and he decides at that point he's going to kill himself, that he gets the gun and does it right there.
Sure, but maybe he's just really considerate and doesn't want to put her through that.
Possibly.
Because he was a super nice guy from what they said. But maybe he wasn't so much angry as sad. Yeah,
I could buy that.
Yeah.
And then he took the walk.
Yeah, it seems like it. Some people following Facebook back when Kelly's body was found said that there was post after post about Jessica's past and that someone was deleting them within minutes. Someone who could be an administrator on the Facebook page. So, Jessica or the family.
So, what about her past?
Well, she seemed to have quite a few people who didn't think too highly of her. I'm not sure exactly what the posts were because they were removed. But they commented on her having kind of a shady history. And what was really interesting is the mysterious death of her husband, her first husband, Jason Baker.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. So it said that he had died of an accident in 2005, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she must be older than Kelly.
Probably.
If in 2015 she'd been divorced 10 years or widowed 10 years.
Yeah. And he was 25?
Yeah, so I'm thinking she must have been more like 30.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
Well, I think probably people are reading too much into it.
You think she's just unlucky in love?
Well, that's maybe not the exact way I'd put it. But I don't think other than maybe knowing more about his final time at the house before he took off and not divulging that to the police, I don't think she was actively involved.
Yeah, I agree.
But then you have to say, okay, so she walked with him and shot him and left him?
No, I don't believe that.
We only see one person walking.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think maybe, though, she was mean to him, said some things, and knew that he left. Like maybe she saw him walk out. I mean, she did look genuinely distraught to me.
Yeah.
But I guess people can act.
You can do that.
Yeah. Or it could be a lot of guilt.
I think her guilt is just on how they ended things.
And that maybe she led him to that. Although, that means he was in a state to begin with if she...
Probably.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that the most logical explanation is that he shot himself.
But it's just strange that the police haven't said anything. I mean, this was like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've searched everywhere. I can't find any comment about that it was officially ruled a homicide or a suicide. So that makes me think that the case is still open.
Well, I mean, if they said that it was a suspicious death that could have been a homicide, they'd still be investigating it.
And they might be. You know, at the end of the show, they didn't say anything. Usually they give you a follow-up if something's happened.
Yeah.
When it's being aired, that wasn't there when they filmed it. So why didn't they have on there that it was ruled a suicide if it was? So I think it's still, I don't think
right.
It's settled.
So it could be that they're still figuring out what was going on.
I think they might be. Because it is a really strange story.
It is. When I was watching the show, I'm thinking, you know, ho-hum, this isn't that interesting. But then the outcome, the stuff that's not said after the show's ended, you know, because they finished the show with, though they found his body. That's
I know.
It.
It's a horrible ending, you know? I know. It's like, tell us what happened.
Yeah.
But that seems to be what reality is if you go searching. We kind of are left there. We know
we
it was a gunshot, but other than that, they didn't even say if he had drowned or died from the gunshot. So we don't know.
Well, we'll try to find out.
But these Disappeared specials are great shows on ID that I really like to watch. I like the Disappeared show, but then the specials give you even more. And there was one a while back about a girl that went missing in Hawaii, a young woman, a pregnant young woman, which we know that that's usually not good.
No, that's not.
So I think we might do that next.
Sure.
Okay.
I'm with you.
All right, I know you are. So that'll wrap it up for today, and we'll have another episode of Watching ID sometime in the near future. In the meantime, you can always hear us on True Crime Brewery.
That's where we are. See you next time.
Bye-bye, thanks.